From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, October 28th. I'm John Myers from KQED, and it's a studio full of fun this morning. It is a studio full of fun. Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times is here. He has reemerged from his cocoon.
Yes.
I
was turning, and now I am a beautiful butterfly.
Beautiful is in dispute, but we'll let that go. And David Siders from the Sacramento Bee, who was good enough to be here last week and earned a return invitation. Well, I bought him a cup of coffee to bring him down from the mighty beehive here at the state capitol.
You know, I'm an acquired taste, so I understand
bees. Yeah. So this should be fun.
There's an insect theme running through this podcast already.
And in which case, we will talk about the buzz over Governor Jerry Brown's pension plan.
I've heard better.
I've tried to do something that's legal, that'll save a hell of a lot of money going forward, and I think is fair.
So the governor, the big news, of course, this week, the governor's 12-point pension reform plan, or as I called it on NPR this morning, a 12-step plan.
Oh, nice.
And the first step is admitting there's a problem, right?
The second step is getting labor to vote for it, or is that step nine?
Yeah, I was going to say a grievances, atonement. We'll get into all that. Assuming that the podcast audience has heard enough about what's in the plan, or maybe what isn't in the plan, which actually we should talk about too. But clearly, it's a plan that I think fair enough to say, guys. The governor's message yesterday seemed to be, I think it's fair. I also think it's as much as I can ask. And the question is it too much to ask? But, I mean, clearly it didn't go as far as some people would want. It went further than other people may say they want it to go. And now it gets put into the legislative meat grinder, and we see if anything comes out of it from there.
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, there's how much you can ask politically, and second is how much you can ask legally. And I think that this might be more than the governor can,
on both fronts?
Well, politically, given the reaction from labor and Democrats, I mean, we'll see what happens in the meat grinder, right? But fair to say that I don't think this will be adopted as the final conference report, as currently written. But what the governor did say yesterday was that the real question is how far you can cut vested benefits for current workers and what constitutes a vested benefit. The governor seemed to say that this is as far as he thought we could go without a rash of legal challenges. That's why the big pieces of the plan, the hybrid 401k plan and raising the retirement age to Social Security levels, only applies to new workers. You can, and it's already been tested and it's already been done, you can ask current employees to pay more. And that's what Governor Schwarzenegger has done. Governor Brown did that in these latest round of bargain contracts. And that's what the governor wants to impose now through legislation or through a constitutional amendment. But legally, I think there are some questions about how far you can cut benefits that have already been earned by existing workers.
And I think that's one of the places, too, where we talk about the money and how much it saves and what it does. That's part of the challenge there is you're not getting to what the retirement packages are that are already in place for workers who have yet to retire. We're not really talking about none of the political debates really are talking about people who are already retired. It's people who are in the system who work for state or local government who have benefits that they have been promised. But let's separate out a couple of things here, first of all. I mean, Anthony mentioned the hybrid plan. And so, yes, it's this plan that says that future workers, most future work, and this is still somewhat gray to me, too, about exactly how the hybrid plan would apply, who it would apply to, how it would work. But some combination of a regular pension, which we know is a defined benefit plan. We're all learning a lot about pensions, which is kind of painful. But we've been learning about all kinds
we'll forget it soon enough.
Esoteric things in this job. But it's a hybrid of the defined benefit plan, which is a pension, and a plan more like a 401k in the private sector, some way to get you those dollars together. And David, you and I were talking about before we started recording the podcast that we've heard the governor express skepticism about 401k plans before for public employees, have we not?
Well, we did in the campaign.
Well, there it is, in the campaign that he ran against Meg Whitman.
But there's a time and a place, right, if you're running for office and have certain allies, and then we're a year later now. And the way he framed it yesterday is he says he's not looking to weaken the defined benefit, because by improving the system overall, he says that improves the defined benefit. So it is one of those, I guess, broader meta arguments.
Do you think people, I mean, but what's your sense of people buying that and or too? I mean, now we can kind of pivot here into the general reaction from organized labor and others. I mean, that the hybrid part was the thing that I kept hearing from them first as the
Yeah, but, and that's what I heard too. And also, you go back even to March, he wasn't talking about a mandatory hybrid. Even then, he was talking about a voluntary with an incentive. So that's something. I will say, I think to Anthony's point, did the administration say in the conference call later on that they thought they could work some of those contracts by waiting for them to expire, that this could be phased because public employee contracts, for the most part, are pretty short, a couple of years or 3 years?
Right. You mean for the retirement ages or for – well, there's a difference, right? I mean, legislation would sort of set ground rules for the bargaining process. That's what the governor has been reluctant to do, so he said, during the first year of his tenure, that he sort of said he believed in collective bargaining. This puts limits on what unions can extract in the collective bargaining process. This sort of takes certain things off the table before negotiations even begin. That being said, you still do have to renegotiate a contract every couple of years, so it would have to start to be phased in. It can't be phased in tomorrow with a new hire or the minute that this plan passes. It has to be phased in after these 21 contracts expire and are subsequently renegotiated.
One of the things that struck me that in trying to look at this yesterday is trying to get to the bottom line. I mean, there are a lot of important policy points here, but at the end of the day, the reason we are talking about public employee pensions, well, there's a political reason, but the political reason is motivated theoretically by the financial reason, that the state can't afford it. Cities, counties, the state can't afford to pay these workers. There's an unfunded liability. There's, you know, tons of money that we owe in commitments that we don't actually think we're going to have. And when you look at what we got out of day one about that, you do not see a solution to that unfunded liability. What you see is, I think, if it all worked the way that they lay it out, is you see something that stops the digging of the hole, but you don't see a way to get out of the hole. If you look at what the Department of Finance said in the conference call with reporters, the estimate was that this plan, and I don't even really think I'd call it a plan. I'd call it a blueprint, really. I mean, a lot of the holes have to be, or the blanks have to be filled in by the legislature and talking to them. But they estimate it would save between $4 and $11 billion over 30 years. So now do the math, divide that by 30. You get at best, and I'm going to use the 11 billion number, you get at best a $366 million savings annually if everything worked out, even though the unfunded liability as it exists is somewhere between $100 billion and $500 billion, depending on whose analysis you believe, what numbers you use.
Well, wait. That's a total...
But that's but that is rolling in everything.
No, but that's a little apples to oranges because the $4 to $11 billion number is just for state. I think the administration said yesterday that they expect another $4 to $11 billion from the locals. So it's not 366; it would be 733.
733, though, against a number that could be upwards of 400, 500 billion, depending on whose number you believe. And part of the problem here, too, is not only you have to whose number about calculating rate of return of investment, but also, too, what's the universe you're looking at? And I think that's where you're getting at, too.
Right.
State, local, UCs. I mean, you know, what is the universe of retirees we're talking about?
And that is the big, big piece of this. And that's why that's the piece that would need to go to the ballot, right? That's why it has to go through a two-thirds process in the legislature to get on the ballot, because you need a constitutional amendment to provide these rules for the locals. And that's where the bulk of the pension problem is. I mean, if you look at what's going on in the state now.
Because it's public safety workers and locals.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that's in this plan, the spiking stuff, the, you know, the anti-spiking measures, the 50 employees have to pay 50% of their contribution. That's already happening through these latest rounds of contracts on the state level. I mean, you could codify it into law so that, you know, as David mentioned, these contracts do expire every couple of years. But a lot of the savings won't be at the state level until this other stuff is phased in. You might get some more immediate savings at the locals where you have some folks who are who are not paying as much, in some cases not paying any part of of their retirement. The city or the county is paying the full freight, and some employees aren't paying anything.
And there's some possibility, too, that even having the discussion helps local governments negotiate with unions that are now renegotiating or coming into renegotiating.
Almost a good
contracts.
Cop, bad cop thing, like, hey, come sit down at the table and negotiate this, or the state train is going to run over you a different way.
Yeah. Well, and this is interesting. This is one of the instances where, you know, typically the cities and counties are all about local control, right? They want to be able to control their own destiny. This is one case where you had, you know, folks from the League of Cities imploring the state, please bind us, you know, tie our hands so that we don't give away the store to the unions. Because there are all sorts of strange dynamics around this issue, and I think we'll see them play out over the next year.
It also plays out that way with the governor, who has spent a lot of time this year talking about, let's stop having the state tell locals what to do.
Right.
And now on Thursday comes back and says, well, we're actually going to have to,
rules.
We're going to have to standardize this because right. There are too many other things out there. I mean, I think a lot of people do forget, and I just want to say really quickly, I mean, we think we know about how pension systems work, and we really don't, which, of course, sorry to all of you who either read your stories or listen to our stories. But turn off the sound to my phone. See, that's usually Anthony that does that. But how many different pension plans are out there? I mean, you know, this number that they're somewhere on the magnitude of 3,000 right. different plans that operate in local and state and municipal kind of entities in California, it's just a phenomenal number. So, yeah, the governor has been talking about local control, and now he's talking about state control, and it's a shift there. David, you had a point, and now you feel as though you don't like your point.
No, I was just going to say, this is the governor who said after a bill signing that there are no inconsistencies when it comes from – that he is consistent because it comes from the same mind.
Right.
So really, who are we to question?
Right, and he's also helps me sleep at night.
And he's also been someone who's a fan of quoting the great quote, consistency being the hobgoblin of
– Little minds.
Little minds. And that goes, too, to the 401k issue that we talked about, where he had concerns about it before, though now he says it's different. Let's get to the politics of this, though, because there's a fair – you know, all of us wrote the story as we needed to write the story yesterday, that unions were concerned about this. They weren't fans of it. Democrats in the legislature had concerns. Of course, it was a great moment. And this is where people – I don't want to get too far off track here, but people always like, you know, well, the press has got it in for X, or we have a particular bias, whatever. We're just interested in the novelty factor often that comes out. And you had all these Republicans issuing these great flowing, I applaud the governor for doing X. I mean, you know, maybe they wanted him to do more, but they liked the plan. But there is – so that is the path that we all had to kind of write the first story, because that's what was being presented to us, I think. But there is this upstream kind of other dynamic you hear buzzed around, too, that – they're not so unhappy, or this plan's not real. Dan Walters, David, your colleague at the Bee, you know, wrote a column today that said, is really Jerry really going to do this? I mean, there's a lot of discussion about what's the politics here and how does this work, and can the governor bite all this off? Does he want to bite all of this off? Can he do it in the context of the budget and all the other things that are going on? I mean, I know it's early to sift all of this out, but
I think given Steinberg's comments about defined benefit, even that alone
– his aversion to it, or his
– his
like of defined benefit.
Of it,
exactly.
Suggests that the major components of this plan don't survive. But some of the minor ones might, you know, pension spiking and airtime, things like that.
Those bills have already passed. Some of those bills have already passed or were passing in the legislature until they decided to embrace this as a comprehensive issue. I mean, you know, in terms of this line of thinking, this line of analysis, it depends how cynical you want to get, right? You could say, hey, the governor, this is – I mean, I think you have to believe this is his real thinking. I mean, I think from covering the guy for a year, it sounds about right. It's similar to what he talked about in the campaign. He updated his campaign thinking at the end of March, you know, where he talked about a lot of these same 12 issues. That was another 12-point plan. Back in March, this is sort of fleshing out a little bit. Seven but five were under development. No, it was 12.
Okay. Right.
It was 12. Five were being considered. And frankly, some of them didn't get mentioned here, like the cap.
Talked about everything.
But the hybrid issue was on there. I think you have to put this in the context of a couple of things. Number one is this election in November, right? The governor is going to ask for higher taxes in November through a ballot initiative, which will probably be funded by a lot of the same labor unions here that are opposed to this plan. So there's that political dynamic. And the governor wants this on the ballot. I think, again, I don't know if his thinking has changed on this, but I know that when this was part of the budget discussions in March on the special election, the governor seems to believe that if you have pensions on the ballot, it helps the prospects for taxes passing. This is the sweetener, right? That you show voters, hey, we're digging into your wallets, but we're also taking steps to fix the long-term problem. And so I think that from a policy level and also from a political level, the governor thinks that this is going to help the revenue discussion. If he's successful in convincing labor of that fact, then maybe we do get something through the legislature. The question is, can you by definition, can you get something through that labor would support that would also have Republican support? And that's, you know, that was the question with the comprehensive tax reform package that blew up in June. I think the first answer was no. And I think that we're heading down a similar road here with these discussions.
Well, I think that'll make an interesting question for the governor next year. If they come to a place where Democrats and labor in the legislature can agree to a package, and let's say that package is reduced from what the governor proposed, there's some advantage clearly to the governor being able to push something forward with labor and Democrats. But on the other hand, he doesn't look bad warring with labor going into a November election.
There's no doubt. And you and I talked about this earlier. There's no downside for him with the plan that he put forward yesterday.
Today's headlines are great for the governor.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. What I find interesting, though, too, is that, you know, this, Anthony, playing on what you were talking about, this belief that you've gotten from the governor's side that the pension issue can help the tax issue in November 2012 ballot measures. The question is, you know, the governor's political strategy to date has been, compromising with Republicans, negotiating, looking for the special election that he didn't get, and on and on and on. In which case, you wonder if some of his traditional allies are less inclined to go along with his strategy so far, because there was a lot of criticism of his strategy through 2011. Like, this is the wrong way to do this. You know, they wanted an initiative. They wanted other things to do. And the governor, you know, successfully held the line, but he didn't get really what
happened.
He wanted.
I mean, he held the line through the negotiating process, but in the end, that process failed.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really get the sense, I mean, I guess we'll find out as we get closer to the release of the budget, but I don't really get the sense that the governor's in the mood to go down that road again and be mired in some kind of legislative deliberation that requires 2/3. I mean, Even though this, I mean, at least on the revenue issue, we'll see. You know, these are the sort of strategic calls that the administration has to make now, as they put together their budget strategy and their strategy for the November ballot as well.
I wonder too about Republicans in the legislature. You know, their reaction was all basically positive to this yesterday, and looking at this plan, that's what we have as the 12-step plan, as I'm going to call it. There's a lot of what Republicans were asking for last year in it.
It goes further.
It does go further, but it has a lot of the fundamentals of what the GOP 4 or 5 were asking for in the Senate in those negotiations over the budget, the hybrid issue, it's got a lot of what they were asking for in there. And so now, if you're Republicans in the legislature, what's your play? I mean, you know, you support this, but the Democrats are not going to probably give you this. So will you take less? Does this become part of the
compromise?
Compromise? Does this become part of the budget negotiations? I'll give you X if you do Y. I mean, you know, this is politics.
On the face, they say they will. They say they'll support this, right? But I do think we should remember that Republicans have friends in labor too, and they're in public safety. And so while public safety looks to be protected to a greater extent in this plan, the details aren't hashed out yet. And we've seen public safety make plays on Republicans before, and it's possible they will again.
Well, and that's a good point, too, because, I mean, I think, you know, this also brings in a couple of issues about under the umbrella of what you call organized labor. We're already starting to hear, I think, more in this year than we have in other years of a different tone an approach from organized labor that represents clerical employees right. or rank and file average workers versus the tone of public safety, police, fire, correctional officers, what have you. You're hearing the tone different in what to do about pensions, which I think is an interesting dynamic because I think in years past it was easy for all of them to be unified. It may not be as easy to be unified any longer. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic. And then I think, too, just trying to figure out, like, you know, what do you get? And then also, you know, do we have a long legislative debate about what is retirement fairness in the middle of an economic recession when a lot of people's 401ks and retirement strategies in the private sector have gone kaput? You know, what is a fair wage? What is fair to have in retirement? The governor talking about 75% of your income yesterday, if you're a public worker, yeah, is fair. No. And I think a lot of private sector people would look at that and go, man, I wish I had 75% of my salary to count on. You know, this is going to be a very interesting – the optics of talking about retirement benefits is fascinating to me in the context of the budget and the economy and an election. You know what I'm saying here? I mean, we've had other political fights in this state where teachers, firefighters, you know, that was the great political image, you know. So, it's, you know, teachers, firefighters, and it's not to take anything away from their jobs. That's not my point. But, you know, they are, you know, great and we've got to protect them. And now you're going to have a very different dynamic about who they are and what they get and what they're entitled to while they're also asking for issues about public spending and election issues, and they might be fighting a paycheck protection initiative on the November ballot. I mean, right. there's some complicated politics here. It seems
right.
like,
and the governor alluded to that in his press conference yesterday when he was talking about, you know, it would behoove. He didn't say labor, but he said the legislature to get on board because there's going to be some things on that ballot in November that they're going to care about. And that was clearly an allusion not only to the any tax initiative, but also paycheck. I mean the curbing of union dues for political purposes. So, and I think that ties back to this idea that Brown thinks it's an easier pitch to say, hey, you know, give us some taxes in the short term, and look, we're actually making progress and addressing the long-term problem. You know, in terms of Republicans and what happens, I mean, couldn't you, if you wanted to be cynical about this, just see this being queued up, saying, yeah, the Republicans will come out and say it now that they support it, but they know that this is going to go through the legislative meat grinder. They know that it's going to be, in their eyes, watered down. And so when that inevitably happens, they'll throw up their hands again and say, see, look, Brown's just, you know, this place is just run by labor. There's nothing we can do. There's no having a deal. And we're back to where we were in June. I mean, I don't know if those dynamics are changed by the onset of the elections in 2012 and the new district maps and the new primary rules, and perhaps maybe just another year of all getting to know each other. I mean, maybe. But I didn't get the sense that when last we checked in that those relationships were very healthy.
Yeah.
You know?
You didn't get that sense?
No, maybe I'm misreading that one, you know. But correct me if I'm wrong. Please.
I want to know if you guys picked up on this or if I'm just making too much of it. But one of the Republican reaction elements that I noticed, whether it was from I think it was in Assembly Republican Leader Conway's statement. I know it was in Bill Emerson, state senator from Southern California, who was part of the GOP-4 in his statement. Show me the protections. Show me the constitutional protections so that future legislators can't undo this deal. And I'll support it. And to me, there's a really important element there about the constitutional issue, because even if you're a Republican and you agree to less than what you think you want, maybe your end play is let's make sure all of this is constitutional, because that, again, gets back to this issue of what can be undone. It gets us back to, you know, what legislatures have moved back and forth on pension packages in the past.
Right.
I mean, you know, that to me is another move that you can see here about, you know, okay, if you want to put X on the ballot, I want X plus Y on the ballot as part of this.
But that's assuming that it all goes through. I mean, Constitution is synonymous with an election, right? You need to change the Constitution at the ballot box. But, I mean, let me just throw this out here, okay? If the revenue question, it was clear, right? If there was no revenue deal
back
in the legislature.
During the budget talks.
Yeah, if there was no revenue deal in the legislature, then it was clear who was going to go out and fund a revenue initiative on the ballot. Labor is obviously going to want that. Some business folks even might want some of that. But let me ask you, who's going to go out and fund a pension initiative? I mean, where are the, you know, $20 million, $30 million for a campaign to qualify and fight labor on a pension reform package that they oppose. Where is that money going to come from? The business community doesn't care about public sector pensions, do they? I mean, you know, where does that money come from?
Doesn't that become, though, an umbrella campaign where you're fighting for everything, the tax measure and the pension, all of it as a reform California campaign?
If you get to the kumbaya stage. But how do you even get that on the ballot? Mm-hmm. I mean, if it devolves into these silos, into this balkanization, right, where labor just says, ah, we're just going to run our revenue campaigns and see what happens. I mean, who's gonna put that on the ballot if not the legislature?
Are there silos in the Balkans? Sorry.
There's lots
of metaphors.
They love their wheat in Croatia. What can I say?
David Siders, what's your take? I mean, we're sitting here looking at politics that, A, are way down the road, and we can't piece out, you know, we can't tease out. But what
I
the hell?
I assure you, these discussions are going on.
But what the hell?
Well, it's interesting what you said about the Republicans and how they might, you know, if you were looking cynically, how they would react. I wonder, and this isn't the year that they feel this way, but if voter registration continues on the trend it's been in California, and if there is a year at some point where, looking at the coming elections and voter registration, they know that this is the last year where they have a viable minority, so enough to interrupt a two-thirds vote, how they act in that final year. I'm curious what that would – if they knew they were doomed to fall. Well, and this isn't that year. I don't think – I mean, they think they clearly can maintain those seats.
Who knows? But that's actually a good point.
Individual?
Suppose somebody starts – the polling starts rolling in on these new districts and Republicans start to look very bad, not just in the Senate. Everybody thinks it's a long shot that Democrats could get two-thirds in the Assembly. But let me just play the long shot for a moment. Let's just say the polls are looking bad. I mean, for whatever reason, the national presidential race, the mood, the – governor's plan. I mean, who the hell knows? I'm just, you know, but you do raise a point. If early polling starts to look bad in individual districts and people go on the Republican side of the aisle, we got to do something, then, right, what impact does that have on the dynamic about what you play for here? What do you play for here that you think can help you in that election? Is it further to the right, to the conservative strategy? Is it less conservative, which some people might believe because the districts have changed? But then others will argue, as I'm saying on the conservative strategy, under Prop 14 and everything else, you got to shore up your base. I'm not convinced that top two primary actually is going to have this dramatic impact of different kind of elections. But, I mean,
it may change how the Democrats play, too.
Yeah.
And how Brown plays it.
So what's next, do you think? What's the next step here? I mean, the only thing I would, you know, in trying to kind of wrap up our little bow of our conversation. So the governor's plan as it stands goes to this conference committee of the Assembly and Senate. I guess what they have a hearing in November on it to start off that ball rolling.
Right, that's the next.
But then what? I mean, we really don't substantively get anything until next year, right?
Right. That's when legislation would be introduced.
Legislation would be introduced. At some point, I guess we start to see kind of like, you know, how much of this was beating of the chest yesterday and the first few weeks and how much of it is not, right? I mean, we kind of start to see how it rolls out here.
Well, and I think the interesting question will be, you know, after the first of the year, we're going to have a new budget too, right? Which will have serious clues about the governor's strategy. I mean,
Before that with the trigger question, but yeah.
Right. And so the question is, do these roads of pension and budget sort of stay parallel and not intersect, or do they start like what we saw last year, you know, to begin to be interwoven and can you weave a road? I guess you could weave on a road, but whether these paths cross or not again, and what the appetite is for getting caught up in one of these, you know, sweeping bipartisan negotiations. I frankly don't know.
David, from your take on the governor, just really quickly, with the other governor, with the former governor, with Arnold Schwarzenegger, we know what he would do after he would do this. He'd have a roadshow. He'd take it. Now, Brown said yesterday, I'll go to editorial boards, which, again, is a difference in Schwarzenegger and Brown. Schwarzenegger would have these great big...
What if he brought Count Cartaxula to the ed board?
Where is Count? Let's not get there. You know, we know what Schwarzenegger's plan would be. Schwarzenegger's plan would be, I want to sell this to the public. Brown's plan is, I'm going to sell it to the public in a sense, but also too, then what? I mean, I'm just curious. I mean, what we don't know is how hard does he sell it? He says he wants to collaborate with the legislature. So by definition, then you can't sell it as a fully, I've got this great plan, because you want to, you're recognizing that some of it, you know, what's his next step? I mean, how hard is he selling it? How hard is he having a glass of wine with people at his loft, which didn't seem to work earlier this year, to get a compromise? I mean, you know.
But, you know, Brown, he said he would push it hard yesterday, and he did say he would go to the editorial boards. On the other hand, he said, I've got a lot of other stuff to do, too. So that was, I think, a curious comment coming at something where he says this is going to be a priority and says, well, I've also got to do water and high-speed rail and the budget and triggers and all sorts of things. You know, the governor has never been a fan of the roadshow, right? Even on the campaign, it was all, you know, it's California politics. It was all media. So now, he'll probably make a couple of stops in L.A. He'll take advantage of the media market there. But I wouldn't predict he'll be renting a bus.
Yeah, that doesn't strike me as his style.
No.
And I think, and just my last thing is the point you just raised, David, about, you know, where he said, I got all these other things on my plate, goes back to the how does he prioritize them and or are they all kind of woven together, which is kind of what we're talking about here. I mean, you know, and that is what remains to be seen, you know. Yeah. Is this a prioritization of things to do, or is this there may be a universal deal way that I'm going to try to push this forward?
And we might start to get those answers with the triggers. I mean, look, if the revenues are $2 billion below projections, right, and it does look like schools are going to be hit, you know, if there's going to be a $2 billion cut to schools, that could start some discussions again about revenue, and you could even see a small piece of revenue that Republicans could support because it would go directly for schools. I mean, this is hypothetical beyond hypothetical, but you could see a mixing of these issues starting as early as next month.
And I've long suspected that if we get to the trigger cuts for schools, we're going to have a very interesting dynamic about revenues and the election.
Well, right.
Because, I mean, right. You are staring down an election in new districts in a new way of thinking in a national presidential year, and you've got schools are a huge priority of the voters, and you're talking about not having revenue, closing them down, or more days off the school year.
Right.
It will be. I've always thought that would be a major dynamic to look for, not just your garden variety budget cuts, but, you know, in an election year, a bigger debate.
But it's why you can't write off the idea of at least a partial legislative solution to some of these issues that we're talking about before November. Because it's possible. I mean, I think if Republicans are going to support revenue for anything, it's going to be schools, my guess. Not that they have shown a willingness to support revenue for anything over the last couple of years. And so if you have a situation where schools are specifically on the chopping block and there's something small that they can do to prevent that from happening, if you could emerge with a pension plan and saving the school year, that could be a win-win for some moderate Republicans. Potentially. Who knows?
You said hypothetical beyond hypothetical,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. Okay. I wanted to qualify that.
I want to make sure we get all of this down. Hypothetical beyond hypothetical.
Yeah.
You've heard it here first. I'm holding you to that.
Solid, yeah.
Well, and with that, I think we'll wrap up the podcast. David Siders from the Sacramento Bee.
Thank you.
And Anthony York from the Los Angeles Times, who's back with us.
Am I now?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
You were enjoying some time off last week. And
pardon me.
And well-deserved.
Well, we don't get a pension, you know.
We don't offer pensions in public radio or in your line of work.
Anymore.
Yeah. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.